If you think you can't go from politics to the divide, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Welcome to the show. I'm Carol Gold. Our phone-in number is 914-803-4522, and I'm here with my co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
And we want to talk to you about the debates, because the debate, singular, not plural, the Republican debate last night that occurred on CNN for the candidates who are seeking the Republican nomination for president, and I watched it beginning to end. Steve, did you see it?
I saw parts of it, and I saw the highlights in the after show analyzing the debate.
Okay, so good. So then we can talk about, first of all, let me tell you why, and it isn't always possible, but when it is, I watch. I don't like anyone else telling me what I saw, and I don't like anyone else telling me what their experience was. I want to have my own experience, and the proof of that really hit me this morning, as it always does, because I read reviews, I read articles, I looked at polls. I feel like people watched something in another dimension that I didn't watch, because when you see, you watch something yourself, you know, I always call it knowing as opposed to believing. When you believe, you have to have a certain amount of faith. When you know, you have certainty because you've had a personal experience and there's no doubt about what you experienced. So I like to know what it is they're saying, not hear it from somebody else. And the polls were so askew from what my experience was. So, Steve, I want to start with the moderators. I thought, and none of them in particular, I like Jake Tapper. I think he's generally a fair journalist. In a bad field, he's definitely a cut above. But I thought that from the very beginning, there was a deliberate effort to pit the candidates against each other. And they really, it was almost like, well, here's what he said about you, and now what do you want to say about him? And it was very surprising to me because it was very adolescent. I thought it was very not professional. And I thought it was to create a show, which, of course, works very well with the people who tune in because the ratings have been through the charts, both for CNN and Fox, because people want to be entertained. And Donald Trump is very entertaining. And what's been happening with him in this election is very entertaining. And so I think they were determined, Steve, to fan the flames of contention. So before we go anywhere else, do you have any observations or thoughts about that in particular?
Yeah, I think you make a very valid point. The issue was that they were trying to create, controversy with pitting these candidates against each other, and I think that's kind of the lowest form of journalism. The issues are at hand is that politics is a serious game and a serious issue, and we should address those things. And I think I thought it was juvenile for CNN to do it. But I think you're absolutely right. As the numbers reported after the show was that it was the highest rated CNN show ever. So there's a good and a bad in both those things. But I think the good about that is that, you know, these candidates are bringing up real issues, and I think it's a bit of awakening of the American public that they're serious about these issues, and they're happy that they're at least are being discussed about it. At least finally we have a politician, or politicians, I should say, that are discussing the economy, the illegal immigration, the issues at the VA. And, you know, I would say part of my critique, and I would say part of your critique, has been over the last 6 years, it just seems the ambivalence of the general public towards the serious matters at hand. And I was quite encouraged by those numbers that people are finally waking up and beginning to listen to some of these debates.
Well, I'm not as encouraged as you are. I don't find them particularly awake. I think they, many of them, those ratings that were through the roof were because people were turning in for the blood sport. They were turning in to see how Trump continued to kind of outwit the others and then how the others were going to go about attacking him. And so I'm not as encouraged. And I'm particularly not as encouraged because I don't agree with you. I do agree with you, Steve, that substantively they were trying to talk about substantive issues. I don't think the moderators were necessarily trying to. I think the candidates were trying to get to substantive issues. Some of them were more successful than others because some of them were more aggressive than others with their answers. And so they went places that even the question didn't necessarily go. But I myself found, and this is what shocked me more than anything, I find if you were right, Steve, if your premise were correct, then I think Donald Trump would have done much worse in the polling after the event, meaning he doesn't drill down very deep on issues. He doesn't disclose his policy solutions. He doesn't talk in with any depth about any issues in particular. And I think that if we had substance, we had it from other people on that stage, not from him. The closest thing I thought he raised to anything substantive was the comment that he made about autism and vaccinations. Obviously, he's thought that one through before. He said he had his own children vaccinated, but in smaller doses over a longer period of time. And that was something that I don't think we've heard before in debates and no one's raised before. And so in a way, I think he had a little bit of depth on that. But on everything else, he continues to basically say, I'm going to do something very special. I got something very special I'm going to do. And you're going to be really pleased because I'm going to do it really well. For him to come out of that debate and poll as high as he's polled disturbs me. Because it reminds me of how the Obama followers, it's the only word I can use, they were like they drank the Kool-Aid in 08 when the sun was rising and setting on him. You really couldn't say anything about Obama in that election. If you talked to Obama supporters in 08, if you tried to raise substantive issues and say what's been his experience or what does he think about X, Y, or Z in depth, they jumped down your throat. They didn't care. They didn't care what he thought about anything. He was black, he was articulate, and he was running for president, and he seemed like he had a shot, and they were with him. And we paid a price for that shallowness and that naivete. And in fact, it's the blog post I wrote this week called The Authentic Trump, which I want to get to in a minute. But first, I want to finish up this thought, Steve. And that is, I just don't think that Trump voters, not Trump followers, Trump supporters, want to hear anything about inconsistencies in his message from 6 months ago till today. They don't want to hear that he's in many ways a big government guy. They don't want to hear him in his own words say that he identifies more as a Democrat than a Republican, as he did not too long ago. They don't want to hear that he was for Nancy Pelosi and the bailout and the of the banks. They don't want to hear that he is pro eminent domain. They don't want to hear that he is for taxing the rich, the top 1%, as we call them, more than anyone else. I just think they don't want to hear it because, like Obama, they've drank the Kool-Aid. And they like him because he's in everybody's face and he's not a politician. And I don't think that's good enough to be president of the United States.
I'm not saying your points aren't valid, but there's a big difference between the two. Trump has a career of 60 years of actually doing things, and Trump had no career, was a community organizer, had a very, let's call it a checkered past, and really all his work experience had been as a professor, and as a community organizer, and as a politician, and a very short politician. Trump has a record of, you know, decades. And you're right, there might be some inconsistencies. I'm not denying that. But he's touched on a handful of issues that the media and the political class have not touched on in 30 years, 40 years. Illegal immigration is a problem. Let's just cut it to one thing. we don't have a nation if we don't have three things, which is the borders, the language, and the culture. We have nothing at that point. So on one, I believe Trump could win on that one issue alone, because everything else falls apart if you don't have that. The crux of the matter that I think a lot of people are finally getting to is that illegal immigration has a potential to change every conversation in the future that a guy like Trump will never come around again, because the population won't be American anymore. It'll be a combination of mostly immigrants, or I should say a sufficient amount of immigrants to change an election. And if that issue, one issue, is not addressed, we're never going to have a debate again with a guy like Trump or Cruz or Carson or any of these, or Fiorino or any of these people, because that election will never take place. They'll never be able to win the election. It is one of the most crucial things of our time. Pat Buchanan has written about it. Many other authors have written about it. The Catholic Church has written about it. It's essentially an invasion. It's not a military invasion, but it's an invasion nonetheless. Many countries in Europe will be Muslim countries by 2050, and the U.S. has the chance to be a one-party ruled system, a Democratic Party ruled system, if we don't get a handle on our borders. So just that issue alone has the base fired up, because they understand that issue. On the issue of the hospitals, the Veterans Affairs, that issue has been going back since 1960, and nobody's been addressing it. And the issue of this really tepid economy, we finally have somebody addressing it. So you're right, he does have many, many faults, but you know, I'm going to give him credit where credit's due. He's addressing his issues, and any candidate out of the Republican Party that wants to win the election now is going to have to carry that platform now. I don't see how a Republican president or a Republican candidate can go into the election having a different viewpoint on immigration than what Trump has right now. Carol?
I want to give him credit where credit is due. I want to give him credit for raising the issues. I want to give him credit for being financially independent enough to speak his mind from the get-go and put front and center. He's absolutely right. I don't believe that illegal immigration would be on the front burner and as hot as it is if it weren't for him. I want to give him credit for that, and I want to give him credit for making $10 billion or 14 or whatever that actual number is in the private sector as a builder who played the political game, who paid off everybody he had to pay off, who didn't say, I'm gonna do it in spite of the system. He said, I'm going to do it by joining the system. I'm going to become part of the problem. And there are people who've done it without becoming part of the problem. I want to give him credit for making a lot of money, for having an absolutely authentic persona, an ego that is off the charts, and he owns it, and he loves it, and he's not ashamed of it. And I want to give him credit because of the position of power that he's in the private sector, and I want to keep stressing that, in the private sector, the same way Barack Obama was in the socialist community organizer sector, it is different than being in the governmental sector. And so bravo to him for getting this far and raising those ideas. However, I don't believe he's the – number one, a couple of things, Steve. First of all, I happen to believe that you better be careful what you ask for in life, and not you, but anybody, because you're liable to get it. So you don't get to get part of Donald Trump, the parts you like, and then disregard or dispose of the parts you don't like. If you get the guy who will build the wall, who will deport the illegals, who will force Mexico to pay for it whether they want to or not, if you get that guy, you're also going to get the guy who uses executive orders to make Barack Obama look like he was standing still, because you get the guy who's got the ego that says, when I want it done, it gets done. Just like he said to Jeb Bush last night, if I'd wanted casinos in Florida, they would have been there. because that's how he thinks and that's how he acts. So the first concern I have is you won't get to pick and choose that dictatorial, egomaniacal, my way or the highway personality for when you want it and for when you don't want it in office. The second thing is, I believe there are other people on that stage who feel as strongly as he does about illegal immigration. Now, they may not have talked about it as quickly as he did, and they may be more emboldened in their speech now because of what he's done, because of the groundwork he's laid. But I believe a Ted Cruz would close the border. I happen to not like Mike Huckabee, but I believe he'd close the border. I happen to think that a Scott Walker would close the border. I don't think a Jeb Bush will. I don't know what a Christie would do, because he was there last night in wearing like sheep in wolf's clothing, or a wolf in sheep's clothing. He was there like a Democrat, like a Republican, and really he's a big government, just about Democrat himself. I don't know what he'd do with the border, but I know he'd be really tough on the issue of terrorism and illegals in this country who could possibly threaten this country. You know, he made that clear in his position that he held as a attorney, as a, what was the attorney general on September 10th, and then on September 11th we were hit. Prosecutor, he was the special prosecutor. So I think that Trump has assets, but I think his liabilities are greater than his assets. And so I think he has a purpose and a reason for being in this race, perhaps a higher purpose than even he realizes. But I certainly don't want this guy as president of the United States, because I don't want to deal with that kind of authoritarian, egotistical personality, especially following the very guy that we have now. In terms of experience, there's a big difference between running your own corporation, your own company, where you are the be-all and end-all of what happens and doesn't, and running or shepherding a Congress and an American public to lead the United States of America and to be the head of, hopefully for a while longer, the most powerful country in the world. There's a big difference. And I really believe that what Walker said, we don't need an apprentice in the White House. We have one now. We had a guy who did on-the-job training for the last 7.5 years. I don't want another guy in that office with on-the-job training. Ronald Reagan, you can say he was an actor, but he was a governor long before he was a president. And he was tested. His mettle was tested. He was prolific in his writings on his agendas and on his policies and on his perspective and on his conservatism. That's not who Donald Trump is. And because you're a success in the private sector does not necessarily translate. I think it might have been, it wasn't Ted Cruz, I forget who said it last night, that, oh, I knew who it was. It was Kasich, who I absolutely don't like, but John Kasich said he was in the government for 18 years. He was in Congress. You just don't show up and understand how that system works unless you've been in it. A Rick Santorum, a Ted Cruz even, who's a young senator, a new senator, relatively speaking, a Marco Rubio. These people understand how you make Washington work. And I know people get crazy because they say, well, they're just politicians. But guess what? Scott Walker proved himself in Wisconsin, in a blue state. He turned everything around, took on the unions, and survived death threats to he and his family. All that's true. He's a tough guy, even though he comes across as kind of mild-mannered. Ted Cruz took on his own leadership. He filibustered in the Senate. He opposed Obama. I mean, there are people there who understand how you rebel within government, and I think a couple of them have the guts and the courage to do it. I don't want to see an egomaniac like Trump who won't really tell us how he plans to do things anyway, other than to make them really special. I don't want to see him in the Oval Office.
You make a very valid point about Scott Walker, because I would say he seems to me a candidate that has really been overlooked. But the fact is, like you said, is that he went to a blue state and he really fixed some, what I would call some really serious labor issues. The point that I thought was a very valid and you know obviously overlooked is the whole unionization of government workers as a political block and as a political way to control government. And I think he really realized the damage it could do. And probably this Corzine, who was the governor of New Jersey, fell into that trap. That he realized that if you could just win the government union vote, you can win an election, and which is what he did. And he essentially gave the house away to the union workers to the extent that it bankrupted the state. Scott Walker could have done the same thing in Wisconsin, but he realized the damage that could be done by to the detriment of the every citizen of the state by aligning himself with government union workers. And it's not to say that he's against workers. What he's against is the ability of the government to unionize as a one block of people to do so. And I think it was very admirable what he did. And I think it's also you can't deny what he's done. His achievements, because he was a governor, are probably the most profound out of the whole block. Of people. And I do agree with you in that sense. I think a guy like Scott Walker would probably has the same platform as Trump, but he doesn't, in these debates and in general, he's been given less of an opportune time to speak. But I think he would be an excellent president. And hopefully he'll get a platform going forward to speak his mind a little bit more.
I think what I observed last night, and only time will tell if I'm right, is that at the very end, and I don't know if you saw this, but when they were all giving their closing statements in response to a stupid question about who would they put on the $10 bill if it were changed, if they were changing Andrew Jackson's face, or was it Hamilton? I forget. Anyway, when Trump finished his sort of closing statement, he then added, he added, and I just want to say it's really been an honor to be here tonight. And when he said that, I looked at him and I said, he's done. Within himself, he's done with this race. And I'm going to tell you why I said that and why I conclude that and why I think his comment was telling. And I'm reading a lot into the comment, but I was more looking at him throughout the evening. And the comment just solidified it for me. I think that Donald Trump, he loves the limelight. He loves the fame. He loves the attention. And he has done many things in his life that were stunt-oriented to get him that attention for a given period of time, for whatever reason, if he wanted to market something or he was starting a new business or a new television show, whatever. And then he faded into oblivion after he got what he wanted out of it. Running for the presidency is a long and grueling proposition, and it weeds out a lot of people because they're just not cut out for it. I happen to think he's tiring of this limelight because in a cost-benefit analysis, it's taking more out of him than he's getting back out of it. I think he's tired of having to do these debates where the questions are drilling down more, or at least his opponents are trying to drill down more on issues. He's not good at answering issue questions. And I think he's going to have enough soon. And I actually think in his own way, he's going to bow out. Now, I'm not saying he's going to absolutely say, I'm done, and but I think I had the feeling when he added, and it was a real honor to be here, it was the last debate I thought he was going to be at. And I thought he was saying from a really subconscious place, I just want to say it's like been an honor to get this far, the way a contestant would who was eliminated. Now, I know his followers don't think, supporters don't think that. I know the media doesn't think that. I think that. That's just my read on this. I don't think he wants to work this hard anymore, knowing that he could go through all this and not win the prize at the end. I don't think Donald Trump likes to get to the end and not win the prize. So I don't know that he wants to risk it. I don't know that he wants to put in all that it takes. I don't want to end the show without giving her due to Carly Fiorina, because I thought that she was extraordinarily articulate, prepared, knowledgeable, classy, intelligent. I could go on with adjectives probably for another 30 seconds without even blinking. And I thought whether you liked it or not, I thought she put Donald Trump in his place with two sentences over the comment about how her looks and how she responded to his interaction with Jeb Bush. Did you see that, Steve?
Yes, I did.
I like her. There are some, you know, we're not going to get a perfect candidate ever. No one's going to get everything they want in a candidate, and she's got some issues that are of progressive concern to me, or potentially progressive concern, like the guest worker program. But separate from that, I think she's a real contender for, if not president, vice president, and if not a cabinet position. I think she's a force to be reckoned with. Do you?
I like her a lot. You know, I think what I've liked about some of the Republican candidates is just I'm impressed with having citizens, you know, people coming from the workforce and putting their two cents into the government process. I think it's a very healthy and positive sign for our country. I really get distressed and depressed when I see some of the politicians that have been there for 30, 40, 50 years. I think it's unhealthy, and I think it becomes, like, you know, unruly to manage, because it becomes all these rules and procedures, and the act of governing becomes much more complicated than what it should be. So I'm excited when I see someone like Ben Carson, Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, people from the private sector entering, you know, very good points about how government could be managed differently. So, yeah, I think she's impressive.
I just think we do have to be careful, and we do have to be mindful that, because I think we just had a bitter lesson in what happens when you have on-the-job training. I'm not saying there isn't a business private sector person anywhere who couldn't ascend to the presidency and do the job. I'm just saying we need, I think, and if we're awake and we want to be intelligent about our choice, we need to first make sure we don't have someone with some experience in government. I don't want a career politician either. Someone who understands the workings of that muck and that mess. Because when you get there, they really know they know how to stop you in your tracks if you don't know how to play the game. I don't want a game player.
You're absolutely right there.
I don't want a game player to the extent that they don't have ethics or morals. I want an ethical, moral president, hopefully, finally, all together, intelligence, ethics, and morals. It will be comic relief. I want that, but I also want to be careful that we don't wind up with someone. And there's somebody in the chat room who just said we need a military coup. I think we had one. I think it's when they killed actually John Kennedy, but that's another show. I don't think we need a military coup. We might need a populist coup where people who have been asleep and at the wheel and have abdicated responsibility for being citizens in a free republic, we might need the revolution of awakening them. But military coup, I'm not interested in, and nor am I interested in another on-the-job training for the presidency of the United States. So, Steve, and I thank you for listening to Above the Fray. We're here twice a week, Monday at 6 p.m. and Thursday at 6 p.m. Central. We welcome you to join us in the show. We always welcome your comments. You're welcome to phone in. Spread the word. We're here to try to get as many people awake and thinking as we can. We don't need you to think like us. We just need you to think. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
You've been listening to Above the Fray podcast.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.